listening to the Positive Professional Podcast with your host, me, Tracy Yvonne. This podcast is a weekly conversation about all things mental health, self-care, and wellness. And there'll be sprinkles of positivity, mindfulness, and guided meditations. Welcome back to Season 7, Episode 20. Today's episode is different. It's difficult, and it requires nuance. I'm going to be talking about two mothers, two Massachusetts criminal cases, two sets of children whose lives were tragically lost, two women whose mental health became central to questions about criminal responsibility, and one uncomfortable question: who does society allow us to see as mentally ill? And who do we simply see as dangerous? Today, I'm discussing the cases of Lindsay Clancy and Latarsha Saunders. And before I go any further, I want to acknowledge the children, Cora, Dawson, and Kaylin Clancy, Marlon, and LaSun, who are Latarsha Saunders' sons. Whatever opinions we have about criminal responsibility, race, psychiatric illness, prosecution, or media coverage, children lost their lives. They should not disappear from this conversation. And this episode isn't about deciding guilt from behind a microphone. It isn't about suggesting these cases are identical. And it isn't about arguing that one mother deserves compassion and the other doesn't. I'm asking something different. Why has compassion appeared to be distributed so differently? So let's establish what we already know. Lindsay Clancy is currently on trial in Massachusetts for the 2023 deaths of her three children. She does not deny causing their deaths. Her defense argues that severe postpartum mental illness, including alleged postpartum psychosis and bipolar, left her criminally not responsible. Prosecutors disagree. They argue her actions demonstrate planning and criminal responsibility. And that distinction is ultimately for the jury, not social media, to decide. But the Clancy case has become much larger than a courtroom. It's generated national headlines. Extensive discussions of postpartum psychosis, interviews with mental health experts, conversations about failures in mental health care, stories describing her as a loving mother before the killings, public discussions of the numerous mental health providers she encountered, and significant public sympathy. Now let me introduce another name, Latarsha Saunders. Saunders, a Black mother from Brockton, Massachusetts, was convicted in 2022 of first-degree murder in the deaths of her two young sons. Her defense also centered on mental illness and criminal responsibility. She was sentenced to two life sentences without parole. But something significant happened this month. Massachusetts High Court vacated the convictions and ordered a new trial. Why? The Supreme Judicial Court concluded that relevant medical evidence concerning Saunders' mental illness had been improperly excluded from her trial. Now think about that. Mental illness was central to determining her criminal responsibility, yet evidence concerning her psychiatric condition was withheld from the jury. The court determined that error was prejudicial, enough that she was entitled to another trial. And now comes the extraordinary connection between these cases. The judge, who presided over Saunders' original trial, is Judge William F. Sullivan. The judge currently presiding over Lindsay Clancy's trial, Judge William F. Sullivan. That's right, same judge. Same Plymouth County court system. Mental illness central to both defenses, two mothers accused of killing their children, and dramatically different levels of national attention. That deserves examination. But I need to make an important point. Comparing cases does not mean pretending they are identical. Clancy's defense specifically centers on postpartum psychiatric illness following childbirth. Saunders' reported psychiatric history and defense involve a different clinical picture. Their symptoms were different, their histories were different, their circumstances were different, their alleged actions were different, and their legal cases contain different evidence. So I don't want us doing what social media does often, reducing complicated cases to memes and talking points. But comparison can still reveal something important. We can ask, when severe mental illness becomes part of a mother's defense after an unmanageable act, whose illness does society find easier to recognize? That's where race enters the conversation. Let's sit with this. Why did Lindsay Clancy's case become a national conversation? There isn't one simple answer. Her case involves several elements that naturally attract significant media attention. She was a labor and delivery nurse. She was a mother of three young children. Her husband publicly described her with compassion. There were extensive records of her attempts to obtain mental health care. The phrase postpartum psychosis brought the case into a broader national conversation about maternal mental health. It was also a compelling public narrative. A mother who appeared to have everything together became severely psychiatrically unwell. And that narrative makes people think, could this happen to someone I know? But we have to ask another question. Why didn't Latarsha Saunders generate the same national curiosity? Where were the endless conversations asking, what happened to this mother? Where were the national discussions about psychiatric illness and criminal responsibility? Where was the widespread public curiosity about whether the mental health care system failed her? Where was the same willingness to separate the person from the illness? This is where we have to examine the stories our culture has been taught about women, and particularly Black women. As a licensed mental health professional, I want to broaden this beyond these two cases. Black women often live at the intersection of racism and sexism, and that intersection affects how distress can be interpreted. Black women have historically been stereotyped as strong, angry, aggressive, difficult, resilient, able to handle everything. Sometimes strong sounds like a compliment, but strength can become a dangerous expectation when it means nobody recognizes when you are falling apart. If a woman is expected to be endlessly strong, her vulnerability becomes harder for people to see. Her fear may be interpreted as anger. Her distress may be interpreted as aggression. Her mistrust may be interpreted as hostility. Her psychiatric symptoms may be viewed as assumptions already attached to her race and gender. And this isn't simply a social media theory. And I'm going to share more in the next segment. Research examining Black women's experiences across healthcare, criminal legal, and family policing systems has documented experiences of anti-Black, gendered racism, surveillance, dehumanization, and barriers to receiving person-centered care. So when we're discussing mental health equity, representation isn't enough. We have to ask, who receives empathy when they become symptomatic? And here's the uncomfortable question at the center of today's episode. When we see a person behave in an incomprehensible way, our brains desperately want an explanation. We create categories: good mother, bad mother, victim, monster, sick, evil. But severe mental illness doesn't organize itself according to our stereotypes. Psychosis doesn't care about your income. It doesn't care about your profession. It doesn't care about your race. It doesn't care whether strangers find you sympathetic. And mental illness does not automatically eliminate criminal responsibility either. That's important. Having a psychiatric diagnosis does not automatically mean someone meets the legal standard for lack of criminal responsibility. Those are different questions. But if mental health evidence is going to matter, it should matter consistently. If we're willing to ask, was she sick, for one mother, we should be willing to ask that question seriously when the mother doesn't look like the person society instinctively associates with vulnerability. Now let's return to something remarkable about these cases. Judge William Sullivan presided over Saunders' trial, and the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court has now concluded that relevant psychiatric evidence was improperly excluded. Saunders' convictions have been vacated. She's entitled to a new trial. And that does not mean that Supreme Court declared Saunders innocent. It means something equally important in our legal system. She was entitled to a fair determination of criminal responsibility with relevant evidence available to the jury. And I'm going to say that again. Latasha Saunders was entitled to a fair determination of criminal responsibility with relevant evidence available to the jury. And while that decision arrives, the same judge is presiding over Clancy's trial, where psychiatric evidence is again central. That parallel should make us pay attention, not because we know what either verdict should be, but because justice depends on consistency. Mental illness cannot become legally meaningful only when a defendant is sympathetic. Media doesn't simply tell us what happened. Media framing can influence what questions the public asks. One person becomes a mother suffering from mental illness. Another becomes a mother who killed her children. Those descriptions can refer to horrific acts while producing completely different emotional reactions. Language matters. Pictures matter. Which relatives get interviewed matters. Which experts are invited onto television matters. Which stories receive weeks of coverage matters. And there is another practical factor we shouldn't ignore. Families have different abilities to navigate media. Some have access to attorneys, advocates, public relations guidance, supportive networks, and people comfortable speaking publicly. Other families are grieving privately, frightened of saying the wrong thing, distrustful of institutions, or simply don't have those resources. So media disparity isn't necessarily caused by one thing, but race, class, access, cultural stereotypes, and public perceptions of motherhood can all be part of the conversation. I want to challenge you. Compassion is easy when the person reminds you of yourself. Empathy becomes much harder when they don't. And that's precisely when we should examine it. You don't have to excuse someone's actions to recognize their humanity. You don't have to minimize victims to discuss mental illness. You don't have to decide someone is legally insane to believe psychiatric evidence deserves serious consideration. And you certainly don't have to believe Lindsay Clancy deserves less compassion in order to ask whether Latasha Saunders deserved more. Equity isn't taking compassion away from one person. It's asking why compassion wasn't extended to another. I'm going to tie in the Season 7 framework of completion, reflection, and renewal. Completion. Let's complete our attachment to simplistic narratives: good woman, bad woman, perfect mother, monster. Mental illness is more complicated than that, and justice should be too. Reflection. Ask yourself, who do I instinctively believe when they're saying that they're suffering? Whose behavior do I interpret as illness? Whose behavior do I interpret as dangerous? Does race influence who I perceive as vulnerable? Does class, appearance, profession, education? Those aren't comfortable questions, but reflection isn't supposed to exist only when we're comfortable. And renewal means expanding our capacity for nuance. We can grieve children. We can demand accountability. We can take severe mental illness seriously. We can examine racial inequity. And we can insist for fair legal processes. All of those truths can exist in the same conversation. This episode isn't asking you to choose between Lindsay Clancy and Latasha Saunders. I'm asking us to notice something bigger. Who gets seen? Who gets believed? Who gets humanized? Who receives the benefit of complexity? And who has to fight just to have their mental illness recognized? 5 children lost their lives across these 2 tragedies. 2 families will be forever changed. And 2 mothers entered the same Massachusetts legal system with mental illness at the center of questions about criminal responsibility. 1 case became national conversation. The other mother had to reach the state's highest court before a critical problem with her trial resulted in her convictions being vacated. That should make us all reflect. As a reminder, Season 7 is about completion, letting go of narratives that prevent us from seeing the whole person. Reflection, examining the biases that shape who receives our empathy. And renewal, creating a mental health culture where care, dignity, evidence, and justice aren't dependent on what somebody looks like. You don't have to know what the verdict should be to ask whether the system is treating people fairly. And sometimes asking that question is exactly where change begins. Until next time, take care of your mind, protect your heart, and remember you are the most important person in your life.
Thanks for listening and supporting this podcast, and make sure you're clicking the like and subscribe button. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Stay safe, be well, and don't forget to be the best version of you.